Hey everybody, this is John Fusco, and you're listening to the No Film School podcast. It's no secret that filmmakers copy those other filmmakers in their lives who most inspire them. Whether that's picking up on some sort of trademark dialogue, production design, pacing, music, performances, editing, or camera work, many times it's easy to identify and trace a piece of style one director drew influence in from another. With two wildly different yet eerily similar films under his belt, Nicolas Pesch is mastering the art of adapting his favorite filmmaker's techniques in a way that serves his own form of storytelling. He describes his first film, The Eyes of My Mother, as his tribute to 50s, 60s black and white horror, while he claims his newest project, the stylistically impressive thriller Piercing, is his take on the giallo crime pictures which peaked in popularity in Italy during the 1970s. That's not to say his films are a direct emulation of those pieces that he so dearly loves. As his actor Christopher Abbott puts it, filmmaking is all about, quote, gathering influences to create something of your own. Clearly, Pesch is a filmmaker who is not only interested in taking risks, but in creating and pushing style as well. Piercing is indeed one of those risky pictures. Abbott plays a man with, well, psychological problems. One night, he kisses his wife and baby goodbye, seemingly on his way to a business conference. His real plan, however, is to check into a hotel, call an escort service, and kill an unsuspecting prostitute. That prostitute is played by Mia Wasikowska, who ends up providing her captor with a little bit more trouble than he initially imagined. I sat down with Pesch, Abbott, and their producer Jacob Wasserman back at Sundance. We discussed cultivating tone and style in your picture, maintaining your vision through intensely detailed pre-production, and how to create screenplays that will attract both actors and producers to your project. Enjoy. Hey guys, it's John Fusco, and I'm here with Nick Pesch, Chris Abbott, and Jake Wasserman, 2 years removed from the last time I met with you and Jake at Sundance with The Eyes of My Mother. Hey.
How you doing?
Good morning. Do you want to actually introduce yourself so that the audience can get familiar with your voices?
Sure. I'm Nick Pesch.
Christopher Abbott.
Jake Wasserman.
John Fusco. Okay. So I guess I'll just start off by asking, you know, what have you been up to the past 2 years? Like, what got you to the position where you can make Piercing after Eyes of My Mother?
I was actually reading Piercing while we were making Eyes of My Mother. And fell in love with the book, and you know, the producing team that had done Eyes of My Mother, including Jake, we were eager to make another movie together, and the financier of Eyes got me the rights to Piercing, and kind of very quickly, when I was on the like festival tour of Eyes, I was writing Piercing, and we shot it like just about exactly a year after we shot Eyes of My Mother.
Jake, what about you? What have you been up to?
Oh man, well, after Eyes, we were prepping Piercing, and then Chris and I also did another movie, Tyrell, together, which is at Sundance. But I think kind of after, like Nick said, just after Eyes, we were all looking to do like kind of a take the roll out of the success from Eyes and try to do something a little bit bigger in scope. And Piercing definitely set the material set the stage for being able to do that.
What did Eyes? How did like Eyes make that whole process easier, making your second film bigger?
People liked the movie, which was surprising and helpful. I think that it was cool to see that we were right in thinking that people would be down for kind of more esoteric genre stuff.
For sure.
And It made me and the rest of the team confident that we could kind of do another equally specific thing in a different sort of vein, and people wouldn't be bothered by it, you know. And I think that Eyes was so subversive but well received that it gave me the confidence to do just weird in a different kind of way.
Right. Last night in the Q&A you said that sort of Eyes was your 50s-60s horror tribute and Piercing is your giallo tribute. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, Chris loves hearing me say giallo over and over and over and over again.
I love giallo, but I said Nick, if you say the word giallo one more time, I'm going to cut your head off.
So giallo, giallo, giallo. And cutting my head off in this interview would be very giallo.
Yes, yeah, sir. It would be.
Very apropos. Yeah, you know, I think that the... and when I say that, I mean Suspiria is amazing, but I mean less the Suspiria side of things and more the like Tenebrae, Deep Red, Don't Torture a Duckling side of it, and the more crimey stuff. And the Italian filmmakers have such like a pageantry to the way they make thrillers and crime stories, and it's so colorful and the music is so vibrant, and the style is kind of like the polar opposite of Eyes of My Mother, but I love the texture of all of that stuff. And I think that as we conceived the movie, we were always looking for ways to like play with reality. And I think a lot of the giallo stuff, whether intentionally or not, just by the nature of a lot of the technical things they were doing, really do that kind of ambiguous, like, where am I? What is this atmosphere that I'm feeling? And letting everything down to like the sets and the art on the walls inform the character stuff.
Yeah. So Chris, I'm not going to use the word, but how did that style of film influence your performance?
Well, what word? Say it.
Not going to say it.
what's great about it is like it kind of lives in this whole alternate universe and a non-reality in a way. So then I think the kind of the parameters kind of then start expanding of what you can do, and you can kind of start being a little bit more absurd, you know. Like it's such a funny thing to like have two films here, one being Piercing and one being Tyrell, whereas, you know, Tyrell, like a lot of crazy stuff happens, but it's very much based in naturalism, whereas this movie's like highly stylized. So for me, it's just like it was a joy to kind of one actually do physical comedy,
right?
You know, which I've not really gotten to do, and kind of like a weird ode to like all those, you know,
like Keaton, almost like silent films.
I realized that as we were filming it too. Like, oh, I was like, oh, I know, I've never gotten to do this, and it was like that was a joy for me. Yeah,
right. I mean, you don't see mime in a like 10-minute segment or in many movies.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of, especially in the performances, like silent film stuff and a lot of Jacques Tati in there. Like in the little things of like you getting out of the car outside of the hospital, you know, there's a physicality that's just as playful as the tone of everything is. And so many things we always equated to like a dance, whether it was the murder rehearsal or a lot of the stunts and more of the physical stuff.
There's a physical element to the entire film, weirdly, that I think just we all kind of naturally gravitated towards. The way Mia moves in the movie is very like she just kind of floats around the entire movie, you know, and then my character Reed is kind of like very slow. You know, he walks slow. Mm-hmm. Everything he speaks kind of slowly and quietly. And like there's
it's like a repetition to his character too. I mean, he's
obviously,
got
he's like that's his thing. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. And being concise but then he's also has no idea what he's doing. Mm-hmm. You know, at the same time it's absurd and really really fun.
Yeah, I mean, playing with status like that must have been pretty fun, because we go in the first maybe half hour, and though you're like kind of a bumbling dude, we know already your intentions, so it kind of like lifts your status above Mia's, but then there's that reversal maybe like halfway through the film.
And then it keeps circulating.
And then it keeps going and going and going. It's cool. Yeah. And Nick, this is interesting because it's kind of like Eyes of My Mother in that sense, where that reversal happens, where you think, you know, this person's going to be the villain or the antagonist, and then it's like, no, there's like three antagonists, you know?
Yeah, I'm fascinated with kind of subverting genre tropes and making you think you know what you've gotten yourself into, but then flipping it on its head. And I think that in terms of characters, I think that it's, I always think back to guys like Hannibal Lecter, and a character who you don't know whether to like or hate, I think is the most interesting. And to populate a movie where every character is like that, I think is fun, because the audience gets to lean into different characters at different times. And I think it keeps you on your toes, not thinking that you know what's going on, and then you don't.
Yeah. I mean, it keeps the audience engaged for sure. So, Jake,
for you, you're here with Tyrell and piercing. Anything? Are you here with anything else? Like, I feel like you're at festivals with like three or four projects.
We're trying for a VR project that Nick and I did a few months ago, but we didn't finish in time.
Maybe South by or whatever.
We'll see. We'll just watch it ourselves again and again.
Are you like more drawn towards these stylized projects or maybe like something like Tyrell, as Chris was saying, which, not to pick a favorite.
I think I just like challenging and complex films, and like I'm just like drawn to films that are uncomfortable at times that I think are risky in their storytelling format. And I think like in particular with a film like Piercing, one, I trust Nick. I mean, we've known each other. We've been best friends since college. Right. And I know what he's going to do with stuff. But I think one of Nick's biggest strengths is he's like a meticulous planner. And very early on in Piercing and even Eyes My Mother, he just like aligned every department head, every producer, the actor, as to what like the film was. Mm-hmm. And he made this like 70-page lookbook that had, you know, all these film references and images and wardrobe and colors, and just very quickly, like all it took was scrolling through this lookbook to say, oh, okay, I understand what the movie is. And then in addition to that, Nick shot still frames of essentially every scene of the film and built these little miniatures of the sets and then photographed like what, so we, very early on, we all knew, okay, we have a confidence as to like, he's going in this direction, but right. We understand what this film is and what he's going to do with it. And I think that's something that, yeah, just is like a lot of directors plan, but is very unique to Nick and his mind.
Right. That's sort of an insane pre-production process. How long does that take you?
It takes a long time.
Yeah. But it was so different from Tyrell, which was more, you know, Sebastian Silva is like he creates these little worlds where you just step into and there's a freedom to it. It's a lot of improv based, whereas Piercing, we kind of knew every frame
right.
of what the movie was going to be like months before we even shot it.
So what did you do for Piercing for pre-production? I heard you in this other interview before and I was like, holy shit.
Yeah. So I literally like, we didn't have the sets yet. Oh. They hadn't been built and we had only at this point cast Chris. So unlike, I had done this on Eyes of My Mother, but I wasn't able to like shoot stills on the locations with the actors, but I still wanted to shoot the movie before shooting the movie.
Right.
So I literally like did it as like a combination of like miniatures with dolls, and then also like I would Photoshop things into it, and basically just out of foam core made like scale models of all the sets and with like a... Yeah, with a still camera, just shot the whole movie.
Did you make the models that we end up seeing?
No. So the miniatures that I'm talking about now were not used in the movie, and there are miniatures in the film, but they were made by an awesome artist named Laurie Nix, and they were not. Yeah, those were better than my models.
Well, Chris, it seems like you were attached pretty early on into the project. What drew you to it?
Well, I had known Nick already,
yeah.
And Nick had helped out with some like early editing stuff for James White, and that's where I got to know him. And then I saw Eyes of My Mother, and then like I remember like immediately like even that first driving shot like through the truck window, and the cool thing was like I felt all of Nick's influences, mm-hmm. but then also with that film, but then also very much felt his style. Mm-hmm. And I think as an artist, like that's the best thing you can do. I think we're all very much influenced by if you're a director, by other directors, an actor, by other actors, blah, blah, blah. But then you kind of turn that into something of your own. And through Eyes of My Mother, I saw that Nick was a cinephile first and foremost, because there's his influences are run a gamut. It wasn't just one person, like, you know, like the opening shot felt like this long Bellatar like shot or something like that. And I was like, okay, you know, and it, so I gravitated towards that. And then as soon as Piercing came up, like I immediately said yes.
Did you, were you involved in the script process at all?
No.
Or no?
No.
Do you want to talk a little bit about adapting a novel?
Yeah, I mean, it was this novel was a movie as a book. You know, like it was literally down to it's written in the present tense. It's 100-something pages. It's super short. I read it and it felt like a movie. And whether he knew it at the time, I was writing it for him. And I think that it was a relatively straightforward adaptation. I think the biggest thing was figuring out, in the book, there's 45 pages of like internal monologue of this guy thinking about how he's going to go about doing this murder. And for me, that was always the hardest thing to, you know, you can't have a 45-minute sequence of a guy by himself contemplating. And that became the murder rehearsal, which I think is one of the coolest scenes in the movie.
Yeah.
And then, you know, obviously, as with any book, there is more real estate in a novel than you have in a movie in 2 hours, and you know, however long it is. And so there's backstory and stuff that we only get hints at in the film, that it goes into a little more depth in the book. But they're all the like elements from the book have ended up in the movie more
right.
or less.
It's kind of like you pick and choose what information to give that will actually reveal some of that backstory, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So then what were some of the, what was the like big image that jumped out to you from the book that you were like, oh man, like this is a scene that would look like awesome. I need to make this movie.
When he walks into the bathroom and she's stabbing herself in the leg and he just stands there and is like, okay.
Yeah.
I thought it was awesome because even on the page in the novel, you literally turn the page, read that, you get the same like gasp that you would get in watching the movie, but then kind of similar to the scene in the movie, it just kind of, there is no like, oh my God, this is crazy. It's just kind of like,
it dissipates.
Right? Yeah, yeah, it's like, okay, I see who I'm with. And kind of the juxtaposition between the shockingness of the moment next to the character kind of dealing with it in a really normal way was kind of everything to me. And in that moment, you have this guy who had been planning to kill this girl, and I think it's really interesting that he chooses to help her in that moment.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about subverting genre and audience expectations. Like, I was in that moment, I was like, oh God, like, I told you I was getting nauseous, and I was like, okay, here we go. Like, it's gonna be like this for the rest of the movie now, because I'd seen Eyes. And then, I'm not going to like spoil anything, but no, like again, like you just keep
become something else.
Yeah. And I don't know, like 15 minutes into the movie, I was like, oh, this is not a horror movie. This is a dark romantic comedy, as you said last night.
Originally designed for Hollywood's elite colorists, DaVinci Resolve has been used on more feature films and TV shows than anything else because it lets you create images that are simply impossible with other tools. The latest release of Resolve now incorporates full nonlinear editor functionality and fully featured Fairlight audio, integrated directly with color tools to provide a comprehensive and complete pipeline for finishing. Recently introduced and making an impact around the industry for its high quality and flexible form factor, the Ursa Mini Pro professional digital camera combines incredible image quality with the features of a traditional broadcast camera. Ergonomically designed controls on the side of the camera allow you to adjust most settings by feel and without ever having to take your eyes off the action. Ursa Mini Pro also features built-in ND filters, a status display, and a revolutionary new interchangeable lens mount that lets you change between EF photographic lenses or PL, B4, and F-mount lenses. Ursa Mini Pro is lightweight and comfortable enough to use all day, has controls that are extremely fast to use, and image quality that's far superior to broadcast cameras costing 10 times more. That's the Ursa Mini Pro Professional Digital Cinema Camera from Blackmagic Design. The all-new VideoMic Pro Plus from Rode Microphones is jam-packed with useful features for shooters on the go. The automatic power function is perfect for the run-and-gun shooter, automatically turning the microphone off when unplugged from the camera. The mic's built-in battery door makes replacing the battery a breeze, plus it won't get lost. It has multiple power options, including the all-new and Rode LB1 lithium-ion rechargeable battery, two AA batteries, or powering continuously via micro USB. The VideoMic Pro Plus also offers digital switching, which ensures that you have ultimate capture of the audio signal at the source, reducing post-production and editing times. Finally, the high-frequency boost will boost high frequencies, enhancing detail and clarity in the recording, and a safety channel helps ensure that the signal does not clip when unexpected spikes occur. That's the all-new VideoMic Pro Plus from Rode Microphones.
So then let's talk about what exactly, I mean, you guys are all borderline, like, family, essentially. What is it like? What are the advantages of being part of a family like Borderline?
There's so many, you know, it's the collaboration. I think that we have like a community of filmmakers and, you know, it's tremendous. I respect Tony Campos as a director so much, and to have a director that I respect standing next to me on set when there's an issue and I can turn to him and say, like, what do you think? It's a cool, it's a really amazing resource to have. And, you know, like Chris was saying, there's plenty of old filmmakers that I look up to, but there's contemporaries that I look up to as well. And it's awesome to have them kind of in the wheelhouse to help us out.
Was he on set for the
every
entire
day?
Wow, that's awesome. And Jake, were you on set or were you?
Yeah, between that and up in the production office. Yeah, running back and forth between the two.
So then, you know, you're doing The Grudge next. And is Borderline going to be involved in that at all? Or
no, Skylar Weiss, who is a producer on Eyes of My Mother and Piercing, is on Grudge with me, okay. But no Borderline.
So I was just going to ask, like, how it feels to kind of leave the nest in a sense. Are you, like, nervous at all, or what's...
I think I'm excited for, like, my... like a new thing, you know, making it's significantly bigger than my first two movies, and it's gonna be different and new. And I think that more than anything, I'm excited for, like, Eyes and Piercing were very different, but like Grudge is also gonna be very different, and I'm excited to kind of throw my hat into the ring of the studio franchise horror, because I think it's kind of crap and I want to make it better.
Are you going to be like writing?
Yeah, I wrote the script.
You wrote the script? Hell yeah. That's awesome. Do you ever plan on not making a horror film, or do you think like horror is the...
Yeah, I mean, thing? Well, Piercing, I also don't necessarily consider a horror film.
Right.
I think that there's after Grudge, the next thing that I'm writing is an adaptation of a Ray Bradbury short story.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And it's a sci-fi. And... I can't see myself making like a naturalistic Brooklyn hipster coming of age movie.
Right.
But I'm attracted to genre, and whether it's horror, sci-fi, thriller, I think that it's just fun to get to push the style and push the storytelling. And yeah.
Was there anything, like any major lessons that you learned on your first feature that you were able to use for this second feature?
Planning, first of all, like the more you plan, the better. But also, I guess, like, not really being precious about things. Like, I'm not someone who, like, is like, I can't kill my darlings. I'm like, fucking cut.
Yeah.
I can slash all you can. And with Eyes of My Mother, because of that, it was not discovered. The movie wasn't discovered in the edit per se, but it was definitely reinvented in the edit, and knowing and realizing that a movie kind of like takes on a life of its own and does its own thing, and you kind of just have to roll with it. The thing that I took on to this, you know, the book definitely does have a sense of humor, but then in writing it, the story is very dark, and then kind of in making it, it got back to that more lighthearted, playful thing, and that was just the nature of filmmaking, and you kind of just gotta like follow it and let it lead you and not try to fight the things that are happening, and you kind of just at a certain point let the movie make itself.
What was that did you find anything in the editing process for Piercing, like, you know, all these split screen moments?
Yeah, so the split screens were written into the script.
Okay.
Well, one of them was, and then we added two more, but it was Piercing was it was more like the edit process was more like a cultivation of the tone, like trying to figure out the exact right vibe of everything, finding the right music, finding the right pacing, finding the right performances. You know, something that we did a lot of was the takes would be varied in like we would do just different things in the takes and have a spectrum of like totally go ridiculous, be more normal, and in the edit kind of blending all of those to really craft this kind of weird tone, And that was more with the edit process. And like the biggest thing was, yeah, so much of kind of just honing that style and making sure that the style was supporting the performances and the drama and all that.
Is that something that you would recommend filmmakers do in a directing style, is kind of go for the varied, the like most varied possible performances or styles from take to take? Or do you think that it's, do you think that it gives you more to play with in the end?
I don't know. I think it depends on what kind of director you are, you know, and what kind of actors you're working with.
Right.
I think that something that was awesome about Chris and Mia is that we would talk a lot about the scenes, and then we would do them, and I would kind of watch the first take and be like, sweet, that was good. That is exactly what we talked about. And for me, it was always less about like honing the performance to be the exact thing that was in my head, and more about being like, well, what do you guys, like, is there anything else you want to do? And they would have ideas. Like the best thing would be, I would come, like I'd be at the monitor, call cut, come on to set, and they would have ideas of what they wanted to do next, and funny bits, and I always remember
just
the ice
do
pick line.
One, or just do, what was that?
The ice pick line, like, oh, let me get my ice pick.
Yeah, you which know? Is hilarious.
Yeah.
But like, we'd do a take that was just very, like, again, like back to the physical comedy thing, we were like, all right, like once we've kind of felt like we've got it, but like, let's just do one that's completely absurd.
Yeah.
And like real, like a lot of like broad physical comedy, like when Mia's character first gets to the apartment, and like I'm making her a drink. I remember like I would literally do takes where I would do that classic like comedic thing where like my hand would be shaking and you hear the glass like hitting the other glass, which is stupid. But like, but why not have it? You know, just, and it was like, I almost knew it wasn't going to end up in the film, but like it was, I was like, but I got to do it.
Well, it's those like small details, I think, within the performances, you know, like even if it's not like wildly varied, you can like do those little tiny like gestures that'll make maybe a scene 10 times better.
Yeah. And people, and like at least at the first screening, like people really saw all those little things and laughed at them.
Yeah,
which
I mean,
is great.
The what you did with the napkin, and when you were first offering her drink, I guess that was the take that you guys went with,
and which is all him too. That was something like, you know, oh well, I'm getting fingerprints everywhere, and like you out of focus in the background wiping down like everything
try to hide it from
and
her.
She like she notices too at one point. So what can like directors do to sort of encourage that in their actors? Like you've worked with a ton of different directors. What's a good way? Because I think like a lot of first time directors have a problem with like confidence.
Yeah. Well, so, that's the biggest thing, I think.
Yeah.
I think because when you're very, you know, I think obviously hire well, I think, right? If you're a director, like hire, and not just the actors, but you know, obviously the people around you. But, yeah, like being confident as a director to give actors, I guess, the freedom, you know, to like try and experiment, and then just guide and be and do it as a team, and not be precious about it, and that's, you know, I've not really had that many experiences where it's not been that, you know.
You're pretty selective with your films. It seems like you have been in some really good films.
Yeah, I've been in some clunkers too. Believe me.
Well, okay, guys. I mean, I guess on that note, to wrap up.
Well, that's not.
This isn't on one of those clunkers, hopefully.
Yeah. Right.
No, this is not one of those clunkers. We'll say that. Do you have any advice for first-time filmmakers? Just to like finish up here, a golden nugget?
You know, my experience was like, go make the movie. I think that a lot of people wait for permission to go make a movie, and I don't think anyone will ever give you if you haven't made a movie before, you're not getting permission, so just go make it.
They're not going to give you permission to make a movie like you just made either.
yeah and I think that for me, you know, part of, I know this is no film school, but part of the beauty of film school was I had Jake and I had friends that were able to be like, you know what, I don't need you to pay me a bunch, let's just go get a fucking camera and go make a movie, and whatever happens happens. But I needed to just, I spent a lot of years being like, if I only had a like 6 months or a year that I didn't have to work and I could just sit down and write a script, I could write a script. And then you realize that that's never going to come. And you just kind of have to do it and let your life happen alongside it. And then hopefully it works. But there isn't this like definitive moment where it's like, here is your ticket to get to make a movie. You kind of just have to fight your way in and be like, I'm here, suck it up.
I'm going to skip you for now, Chris, and I'm going to ask Jake, how do filmmakers find people like you? Maybe not in film, like that aren't in film school.
Chat roulette. No. Chat roulette.
yeah.
I think, this kind of like goes into, like, I feel like I start out as friends with the directors first, and it's like kind of in our circle of filmmakers, like in New York, like we just have, like even there's a lot of crossover between Tyrell and Piercing Crew. Like we kind of like have this, like we're all friends first and foremost. And so I think that, you know, even for what Nick was talking about, like Eyes of My Mother, we were still rewriting stuff up until
the last day
of shooting. And like the script, it was definitely, we had a script and we shot, but, kind of there was this flex. It wasn't like the script was like in a perfect shape months before, and that it was more that we
script I was like 65 pages,
but like we all knew Nick, and Nick and I have been working together forever, and same with Tyrell, Sebastian Silva's film that's here this year. Like it was that is the loosest script I've ever read in my entire life. It was 55 pages. Like it was, you know, the action lines were like Sebastian talking, but it's like I had seen Sebastian's other films, which I loved, and I, outside of filmmaking, like Sebastian is just like a funny person, and you can sit and listen to him for like an hour and a half talk, and if you can do that, you know, I want to see the movie that he's gonna make. And the same goes for Nick. It's just like I can listen for Nick talk for hours, and I do for like 6 hours straight.
Oh, he does.
Yeah, for 6 hours straight about like a random thing, and it's funny and weird and crazy, and I think that really translates to his movie. So I think for first-time filmmakers, like find, whether you're a director, a producer, a writer, an actor, like find the people that you want to work with that trust you, and then just go do it. Like it's there. It isn't brain science. Like you can make a movie for $50,000. It's easier than ever now. Like with the technology, just like find a story that you like, find some good people, go upstate New York, and shoot a movie, and you might end up at Sundance.
That's great.
Or just hang out in Williamsburg. Or just hang out. Or Silver Lake.
Or Silver Lake.
You're bound to run into one of these.
great. I mean, Chris, I guess my question for you then would be, like, what can a screenwriter do that would make, what do you look for in a script, I guess? Like, what would be an ideal script from a first-time filmmaker that you would like to see?
Minimal stage directions or screen directions.
Cool.
Concise dialogue. I don't think it even takes like an actor to really give this advice. I mean, even if you're there's certain scripts that are page turners, you know, and then there are ones that are not. And you can tell immediately. You can tell by like page 10, you know, or 15, if this is actually gonna go somewhere. I've like rarely have like by page 15 have I been like, ugh, and then keep going and been surprised and be like, oh, this is pretty good. Like you usually kind of know right away. Just work on it and have it be good. I mean, I really don't know what to say.
No,
like, it's just, it's either good or not. It's like a book. You know what I mean? You like when things sometimes, like I've read many scripts sometimes where things are very meandering and like, you're like, what are you doing? Like, what are you, you know, a lot of like, you know, so like in, you know, some indie films fall culprit to this sometimes where it's just like movies just kind of about nothing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like weirdly, like Sebastian Silva is someone who like, it's seemingly like nothing, but then there's so much going on.
Right.
You know, there's like all these like weird little nuggets of something. But then there are movies that are really just about like nothing. And like someone's like, oh, I didn't get coffee. And someone's like, oh no, I'm tired. You know what I mean? And it's just like, I'm like super tired.
That's my first feature. Yeah, not, right. Not,
oh no, I'm tired.
Yeah. Need coffee.
Oh no, I'm tired. It's coming in 2019.
Yeah, none of those.
Cool. Well, great. So avoid those Williamsburg clunkers and fuck yeah, guys. That was a great interview.
Thank you.
Congrats.
Thanks.
And we'll see you soon.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for listening. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to the No Film School podcast on any platform you use. And if that happens to be iTunes, go ahead and give us a 5-star rating. That would be fantastic. I'm John Fusco. You can follow me on Twitter at @Jim_John_Jim. Check back in this Thursday and every other Thursday for our flagship news show, Indie Film Weekly. And of course, remember to go to nofilmschool.com every day to check out all the new articles we have for you there. See you Thursday.